morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Today is Monday, January the 31st, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, warns that it may be forced to end its humanitarian operation in Ethiopia's Tigray province because supplies are running out.
Operations could cease completely by the end of February. Nutrition supplies for supplementary feeding and treatment of severe acute malnutrition have already run out.
And one of Kenya's most wanted terrorists was arrested this weekend in the DRC, where he has been operating alongside the terror group, the Allied Democratic Forces, ADF.
This guy was involved in terrorism since long time, and he fighted in Syria with Islamic State.
And Malawi's government says it is registering low numbers of teenagers taking the COVID-19 vaccine. We have these stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, warns that it may be forced to end its humanitarian operation in northern Ethiopia's embattled Tigray province because supplies are running out. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Intense fighting in northern Ethiopia has prevented aid from getting through to millions of destitute people in Tigray since mid-December. OCHA spokesman Jens Laerke says UN and private aid agencies already have been forced to scale back operations because of severe shortages of supplies, fuel, and cash.
Organizations have warned that operations could cease completely by the end of February. Nutrition supplies for supplementary feeding and treatment of severe acute malnutrition have already run out.
The World Food Program says 13% of Tigrayan children under the age of 5 and half of all pregnant and breastfeeding women are malnourished, a condition that increases the risk of infection and death. Laerke says international aid agencies operating in Tigray report their last fuel stocks were depleted on January 24th. Since then, he says, aid workers have been delivering the little remaining humanitarian supplies and services on foot where possible.
We have seen in recent days, of course, the UN Humanitarian Air Service has picked up again and they are delivering. But you cannot deliver by plane at all the kind of volumes of aid that is clearly needed in the situation.
War between Ethiopian government forces and the Tigray People's Liberation Fund broke out in November 2020. Since then, the conflict has spread to the neighboring Amhara and Afar regions, displacing hundreds of thousands and pushing up rates of hunger and malnutrition. Unlike the situation in Tigray, Laerke says aid agencies can scale up assistance in accessible parts of Amhara and Afar. He says food has been distributed to more than 500,000 people in Amhara during the past week, and nearly 380,000 people in Afar have been reached in an ongoing round of food distribution. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Malawi's government says it is registering low numbers of teenagers taking the COVID-19 vaccine. This is largely because parents and guardians are reluctant to give consent to have their children get the shot. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi started administering the Pfizer vaccine to children ages 12 to 17 on January 1st to help contain the spread of the coronavirus among children. Vaccination of teens requires healthcare providers to seek consent from parents. Statistics show that fewer than 4,000 children were vaccinated as of Saturday, a figure health authorities said was not impressive. The low response is blamed on parents refusing to give consent to health workers. Myres Muhangu is the district coordinator for the expanded program on immunization in the Ministry of Health. She says reluctance is more prevalent for children who go to public or government schools where none of the youngsters has so far been vaccinated.
For the private schools, actually the response is better compared to the government schools. I don't know why. But for the private schools, yeah, it is a positive response. Many schools are booking us, can you come and vaccinate our learners? So we are going to site schools and vaccinate them.
William Malimba is president of the Teachers Union of Malawi. He says it is a non-starter to expect teenage students to get the COVID-19 shot in schools.
This time around, even when the government can decide to go to schools to vaccinate learners, I'm sure that the school can be immediately closed because the learners and even the teachers, they will run away. Unless they have been sensitized. Otherwise, this time around, they are taking this issue as a negative issue because of the coming of this vaccine. It came with some negatives.
Malimba recounts incidents where students have run away from suspected providers of the vaccine.
Even myself, I've been experiencing some situations whereby I was going to certain schools. When the learners saw my car, they ran away. And I was told by the head teacher that the learners are running away because they are thinking that you are coming with a vaccine.
Government statistics show that only about 7.3% of about 20 million people in Malawi are fully vaccinated, far from the required 60% to reach herd immunity. The low uptake is largely attributed to myths that link COVID-19 vaccine to infertility and allegations that the vaccine is the government's ploy to reduce the population. In a statement Saturday, the co-chairperson for the Presidential Task Force on COVID-19, Dr. Wilfred Chalamilankoma, urged all parents and guardians to get their children aged 12 and above inoculated. He said doing so will protect these children from severe disease and hospitalization, even if they do become infected with the virus that causes COVID-19. Some parents say they are not ready for that at the moment. Lindiwe Mwale, a mother of three children, two of them teenagers, is among the parents concerned. She spoke via a messaging application from her home in Chiwembe Township in Blanta.
I'm a parent who have vaccinated them before, you know, the other vaccines which are there. But for this one, I would not want to risk them by getting them vaccinated by a vaccine which is currently on a trial. After all, the COVID-19 is not greatly affecting people of that age. Many of them make it.
Mwale, who is vaccinated, also says with a drop in cases in Malawi from about 700 daily cases previously to now 80 cases as of Saturday, she feels the pandemic poses no threat that would warrant vaccination of her children. Health authorities say they are now planning to meet the parents and teachers and educate them on the importance of having children vaccinated against COVID-19. Lamik Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Cameroon's national football team, the Indomitable Lions, Sunday donated $85,000 and dedicated their 2-0 victory over the Scorpions of Gambia to victims of the stampede that killed 8 people and injured 38 others at Yaounde's Olembe Stadium last week. The Indomitable Lions said they can't be indifferent after people died or were injured as they turned out to support Cameroon players taking part at the ongoing Africa Football Cup of Nations tournament in the country. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Members of Cameroon's national football team, the Indomitable Lions, saying that God will bless victims of this week's crush at Yaounde's Olembe Stadium. The players sang on Saturday evening in Douala, Cameroon's economic hub and coastal city, after beating the Scorpions of Gambia in the quarterfinal game in the Africa Football Cup of Nations, AFCON. A statement after the match from Serge Gifo, the Indomitable Lions press officer, said the players had donated $85,000 and dedicated their 2-0 victory over the Scorpions of Gambia to victims of the stampede that killed 8 and injured 38. The statement did not say how the money would be distributed to the victims, but said family members of those who died in the stampede will be given a share. Narcisse Muele-Kambi, Cameroon's Minister of Sports and Physical Education, addressed the players at Douala's Japoma Stadium after the match.
Vous aviez promis la victoire, mais également une victoire.
Kambi says Cameroonians are happy that their national football team players have helped people who died or were injured while they struggled to watch the Indomitable Lions play. He says Cameroonians are happy that the donation comes after a historic victory against the Scorpions of Gambia. The crush occurred as crowds struggled to get access to Olembe Stadium in the capital city, Yaoundé. Cameroon President Paul Biya ordered the injured to be treated free of charge. Ndukong Edward, a family member of a stampede victim, says the president did not make a statement about any assistance to the families of dead victims. Ndukong says he hopes the government will assist the injured and family members of the dead. He says security lapses by Cameroon's police might have caused the stampede.
If the gate was open as it was supposed to be, nothing would have happened because people would have had access to the field. But if the gate was closed by some overzealous security officers for whatever reason, then they should take responsibility.
Cameroonian authorities Friday blamed the deadly stadium crush on what they said was a massive influx of ticketless fans who arrived late to the game involving the host team and tried to force their way in to avoid security checks and COVID-19 screening. Nasiri Paul Beya, governor of Cameroon's central region, where Olembe is located, says the government will assist victims of the crush after the tournament. He says people attending football matches during AFCON should stop uncivil behavior, such as jumping fences to get into stadiums.
We are calling on this population to follow and respect the institutions, to be able to cooperate, to be sure that Cameroon does not present a bad image by being very patriotic and responsible. It should never happen again. Cameroonians should put it in their mind that what happened at Olembe should never happen again.
Beya said some government ministers, senior state officials, and well-wishers have been giving financial assistance to the victims in solidarity with the state of Cameroon. After the crush, the Confederation of African Football suspended AFCON matches at Olembe until further notice. Cameroon is hosting AFCON for the first time in 50 years. The tournament, which is the continent's main football event, was originally scheduled in 2019. The Confederation stripped the event from Cameroon that year because stadiums were not ready. The competition that ends on February 6 began January 9. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
This is Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. One of Kenya's most wanted terrorists was arrested this weekend in the DRC, where he has been operating alongside the Allied Democratic Forces, an Islamist group operating in Uganda and the DRC. Salim Rashid Mohammed, who has appeared in numerous ADF propaganda videos committing violent acts, was captured on Saturday in the town of Beni by the Armed Forces of the Democratic Republic of Congo, FRDC. He was on the Kenya anti-terror list after skipping bail in a 2020 terror-related case in Nairobi. The government of Kenya was offering a $100,000 reward for him and four others on terrorism charges. From the DRC, reporter Sabiti Jaffa Arkatante tells me that it was suspected that Salim was on his way back to Kenya from Cabo Delgado, where he had joined Mozambique's Islamic State group.
Mohamed Salim has been famous in the propaganda videos of this Islamist movement, where he can be seen in FRDC uniform, killing people, killing soldiers.
Was he arrested? And what does his arrest actually tell us about this group, the ADF?
There is an ongoing operation against ADF. And since 2 months now, there is a big coalition between Ugandan forces, Congolese forces, and UN forces in that region to track and to neutralize all ADF. That's how the guy was captured by FRDC. Not only him, but we can say he's a star because he's the one who has many videos, who is in a lot of videos of propaganda.
Do the authorities have an idea how he ended up in the DRC all the way from Kenya?
Himself said he came in DRC in a transit going to South Africa, and he was captured by ADF and then forced to break with them. But it's not true because we can have some videos from Kenyan authorities who show that this guy was involved in terrorism since a long time, and he fighted in Syria with Islamic State. So it's a terrorist, and he didn't come here for looking a way to go in South Africa, but he came to operate as all other ADF.
How long has the ADF been operating in the DRC, and how have their operations impacted life in the eastern part of the country?
This is a very difficult question because ADF, as a militia, not an Islamic militia, but just a Ugandan militia, is in DRC since some decades. But they became a terrorist group and an Islamist militia since, we can say, 2014. And since that time, their presence in DRC impacted everything in the Beni region, Beni and Ituri region, because they kill people, they kill locals, so people cannot join their farms. Some roads are now unusable, so they impacted negatively the economics, politics, security, and everything.
That was reporter Sabiti Jaffa Alkatante speaking to me from Goma in the eastern part of Congo. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees says the Kenya government has started issuing national identity cards to over 13,500 Kenyans who have lived as refugees in the Dadaab refugee camps. About 4,000 others are waiting to have their cases evaluated. The UNHCR Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa, Mohamed Abdi Afi, tells VOA's Harun Maruf that the agency is glad that the wait has come to an end for the thousands of Dadaab refugees who were born in Kenya but sought facilities and support from the camp as refugees.
We are very thankful to the Kenya government for the decision to successfully issue over 13,500 national identity card to a group of Kenyans whose fingerprints initially, unfortunately, were captured as refugees because these people came into the camp, given the location of the camp in the Somali region of Kenya. There are quite a number of Kenyans who came into the camp in order to access the facilities in the camp of education, of healthcare, of food, that the local host communities felt that was a unique opportunity for them. Unfortunately, this trapped their nationality, and it has become a difficult issue for them to reclaim their nationality since their fingerprints have been captured in the refugee database, and that data has been synchronized with the Kenya national registration exercise, and that meant that these people were somewhat stateless, even though they are Kenyans. We are glad and happy that this exercise has been successful following constant consultation and discussion between UNHCR and the Kenya government. And therefore, we want to congratulate those Kenyans and also thank the government for this important gesture.
And what's the next step for this community who rejoined or regained their citizenship?
Well, the next step is these are Kenyans. They know where they come from within the Kenyan landscape. Most of them are coming from the host communities or the areas around the refugee camps. So they return back to out of the camp to the areas of origin and they become to regain their citizenship and participate in the national development of their country. As you will know, most of these people whose children ended up having education even in the camps, finished education to some extent and some level, but cannot be able to either be employed or to pursue to the local universities because of the fact that they were captured as refugees. But this gives them now an opportunity to regain fully the rights of every Kenyan, including the right to vote and to be voted for. And now they return back to their villages of origin that they had come from in the first place.
And what does this mean for the refugee population in Dadaab?
This is quite significant. This means, therefore, we as UNHCR and the Kenya government then will be able to have the opportunity to assess the exact number of refugees who require protection and the support in this country.
That is UNHCR Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa Refugees, Mohammed Abdi Afi, speaking to VOA's Harun Maruf. Now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and for that we go to Cameroon with Samson O'Malley. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, Jackson. We begin the sport with the African Cup of Nations, where all the semi-finalists for the 2021 African being hosted by Cameroon have emerged. In matches played over the weekend, host Cameroon beat Gambia 2-0 in their quarterfinal in Douala in their first outing since the Olympic disaster, and they will now return there to face Egypt on Thursday in the meeting of the two teams with the most Cup of Nations titles. In Garoua, it was 19-year-old Dango Ouattara who scored on the stroke of halftime to ensure a 1-0 win for Burkina Faso over Tunisia in their quarterfinal game at the Romdi Aija Stadium on Saturday. Ouattara held off two defenders to strike home the ball from close range after a breakaway attack in the 3rd minute of stoppage time at the end of the first half. The striker, who later got himself sent off, was sent on his way by a pass from inside his own half from Blati Taore as the Burkinabes played a clever counter-attacking game to advance to the last four of the tournament in Cameroon. Adama Guerrera is Burkina Faso midfielder.
It's true that right now we have a really young squad compared to before, but all these players are playing already in Europe. They know what is the high-level competition, so they are ready to also contribute to the strength of the team. So I don't think we all in the team thinking the same way, and that the only way we can have some victory.
It is the third time in the last 5 editions of the Continental Championship that Burkina Faso have gotten into the semi-finals, and they will next take on Senegal. On Sunday, Egypt got into the semis after a scrappy, tightly contested match thanks to the creativity of Liverpool striker Mo Salah, who overturned Morocco's early lead with an easy close-range finish, then a dazzling assist to hand Trezeguet a goal on the plate. Morocco took the lead through an early Sofiane Boufal penalty, only for Egypt captain Salah to equalize early in the second half, following up to score. Coach Carlos Queiroz speaks on his team's victory against their North African neighbors.
Yeah, this moment, the most important thing is to rest mentally, physically, and get ready for the next game.
In Sunday's game, Senegal's Sadio Mane returned to set up Famara Daidu for their opener, only for Equatorial Guinea to respond through Yannick Boulia. But Chikwe Kanyote and Ismaila Sarr made sure of the 3-1 win for the Lions of Taranga. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Yaoundé, Cameroon. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Just search for VOA Africa. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.